Bags down, spikes on. Welcome to the track. Hi, my name is Colin Waitzman. I'm going to be your host of this episode of Track World News, presented by Track Barn. And dang, do we have a lot of things to talk about. We have Fred Curley putting up the best opener of his entire career, the possibility of have two Division II athletes being in the Bowerman Final, and then some more Texas Relay magic. So if you don't want to miss any of that, please make sure to listen to this episode, give us a like, subscribe, leave a review, leave a comment. All of that helps us know that you're enjoying the content coming on here, and let's jump into it. So we're going to start off with Fred Curley. So this is a man who is showing that he can do anything. He is the Superman of track and field, it seems like. He's done the 400 to start off with. He's then gone down to the 2. This past year, he went down and focused on the 100, where he won his first Olympic medal with the Olympic silver medal in the 100-meter final. And then this year, he opens up his outdoor season. He didn't do anything indoors. He started off outdoors this past year in, what was it, Florida, Granada, and this is what he ran. So in the 400, he opened up with a 44.47, best of his entire career. And then in the 200, he opens up with a 20.04, best opener of his entire career. And then he just ran this past week the 100 meters, where he ran a 9.99, clocking in at, once again, the best opener of his entire career. He's running really fast right now and at really fast times. Now, Fred Curley, he's obviously at another tier where, for most athletes, this would be fantastic numbers to hit in your entire career. These are pretty middle of the road for him. Like, he's run much faster than this in the past. He ran, what, a 9.74. He's run several 19s, and he's going for the potential world record in the 400. So I mean, he's done a lot in the past. So these numbers aren't crazy for him, but they're great for where we are at in the beginning of the year. This is March. He's got the world leading time in the 200, in the 400, and the second best in the 100 meters. And so to be this, you know, this fresh, not doing indoors, you know, coming off of an Olympic medal, like, that's a really good place to be. And so he can be scary this year, like, being able to run this fast. And I think the real question that a lot of athletes are wondering is, what is he going to be running at the World Championship? And it's going to matter on a few things. I was listening to a couple podcasts of people figuring out what they think he's going to run, and they're looking at what other athletes are doing. So they're saying, oh, if you look at the 100's looking stacked. It's got Coleman, Bromell, you know, look at the 200, you got Lyles, you got DeGrasse, you look at the 400, you got Gardner, you got Wade Van Niekerk. And they're looking at what all these other athletes are doing. And when I'm thinking about Fred Curley and just thinking about the mindset that he has, like, if you look at his tweets, he's tweeting out, I am greatness. I am going to be creating, like, I'm making history. Like, I'm going to be, you know, world breaker, phase 42. He's tweeting all of these things that show he doesn't give a damn about what anyone else is running except himself. And so people that are saying, oh, it's going to matter a lot on what these other people are going to end up running, that's what's going to determine it, I don't think it does. I think it is completely determined off of what he's running towards the end of the year and what he feels most comfortable in. He doesn't give a dang about what other people are running. He cares about what he's doing and what's going to give him the best chance of winning a medal. Now, all of the events that he competes in, so the 1, 2, and the 4, all of them, the U.S. have an extra runner in for the World Championships because Coleman got the bye, Lyles got the bye, and then Michael Cherry got the bye. And so there's going to be 4 qualifiers and not just the 3 normal qualifiers. So it's not like he has to think, okay, what do I have a better chance of making it in? It's really what he feels is going to be the best chance for him to run as fast as possible. Like, where is he? Because all these times are fairly equal to one another. Like, they're very equal times for what he's doing. I think that his strongest event right now is probably the 100. Then I'd say maybe the 4 and then the 2. And so but they're all very close. They're all very, very close. And I'm wondering what he's going to end up doing in the World Championships. Now, I originally pegged him as doing the 1 and the 4. And that's definitely a possibility. I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, like we said, he's tweeting out phase 42. He wants to run that world record. And I'm not sure. Another factor that's going to play into which one he's going to be doing are, you know, what's the schedule looking like? Because track and field, unlike literally every other sport, does not have a set schedule. Events can happen at very different times. Why that's the case, I have no idea. If it was up to me, I think that we would have one schedule for all of the meets. So if you're a single meet in high school, this is the schedule. If you're in college, due day meet, this is the schedule. If you're at the pros, a world championship, this is the schedule. It happens every time, and so you know what's going on. You know what you can double in. You know what you can't double in, and that's that. But that's not the case. And so I'm wondering what the schedule's looking like for him. You know, what's going to be the most possible double? What's going to make the most sense for him? And that's what I feel is going to be playing a bigger factor than whatever anyone else is running. The biggest thing that's going to be playing a factor is how fast is Fred Curley running, and then what is the schedule looking like in the potential doubles. I don't think it matters at all what other athletes are running for him. I mean, he's already qualified on week one for the World Championships. If he didn't want to compete at all the rest of the year until USA's, he wouldn't have to, because he's already in. But I'm excited to see what he's going to end up running. If I'm making a prediction, man, it's going to be so close. I mean, running your fastest times make it seem like you're probably going to be PRing, right? Because if you're setting up, best this early, it's going to be a big thing. Let's go with like a 9.71 in the 100. In the 200, let's go with a 19. Oh, man. Maybe like a 19.4. Let's do that. And then for the 400, let's do 43.2. Why not? Who knows? It depends on what he's going to end up running throughout the year, but I'm excited for him. And talking about Fred Curley as well, this was, I think, 2 days ago, if you're listening to this on day one, but Fast University actually did an episode or did a Instagram Live with Fred Curley, Aaron Brown, and Jerome Blake. If you're not familiar with Fast University, I would definitely take a look at it. But they were doing an Instagram Live where they were covering the business of track and field. And the issues that many athletes are seeing right now on how to become a bigger marketable name for themselves. And it was a very great, very good Instagram Live. It's still on Fast University's Instagram feed. So if you want to take a look at that, I would definitely recommend it. It's very informative and interesting, hearing from many of the top minds in our sport. And I think it shows and shreds a light on the fact that many of our top athletes are not really being treated the way that they probably should be. And I think that there's a few different reasons for that. So one of it can be, what are the shoe brands limiting the athletes to doing? So what are things that the Nikes, the Pumas, the Adidas, the Asics, the Ons, all that type of stuff. What are the things that they're not allowing their athletes to do? New Balance. What are things they're not allowing their athletes to do? And from my perspective, don't understand why we don't have custom jerseys for each athlete. Like, if you look at a track meet, a professional track meet, every single athlete is wearing the exact same thing. Like Nike, all the Nike guys are wearing the same thing. Like Prefontaine Classic is the worst, because every Nike athlete competes it there. They all wear the exact same outfit and is the most annoying thing. Why don't we have some more customization in there? Shoes. Why don't we have the Curly ones, the Mondo ones, the Krauser ones? Let's get some spikes, get some athletes that can actually, get the name behind them, because I bet you that's going to make more money not only for the shoe companies but for the athletes as well. And so they were discussing just all these things and the issues that we have and where it's not as fruitful as it should be. And in my mind, that's completely true. Like, there are a plethora of opportunities for athletes to make more money. And I'm wondering, how much is it that these companies are not allowing them to do things? And then how much is it that some of these athletes just may not know, what they can do, because they're maybe valuing themselves a little low. Like, I mean, the fact that you can get in contact with many of these athletes, on a semi-regular basis, but you think you're getting in contact with some of these baseball players, basketball players? Like, hell no, you can't. And so maybe it's the valuation of what they think is too low of themselves. Like let's branch out. Let's try to see some things where you're utilizing your name, you're selling more merchandise, you're trying to become a household figure. The only household figure that we have are Usain Bolt and Sha'Carri Richardson. And so what are those two things have in common? So one, they're both very fast. Usain Bolt got his household name more off of being fast than his personality. His personality was a big thing, obviously, but the speed is what got him there. Sha'Carri Richardson, what got her there? Her speed, but I would say her personality had a bigger impact on the reason that she is bigger, because there's plenty of sprinters that are just as fast, if not faster than her, that have nowhere near the same following that she does. But she has that because of the personality that she's driving behind it. I'd love to see that for more track athletes. Like, yes, people are mentioning, like, oh, I deserve to get this, you know, these big contracts. And sure, like, I think you should as well. But, like, what are you doing to deserve that outside of just track times? Because I'm all for, like, you need to run fast if you want to be making money. Like, of course, if you're not running fast times, you're not going to be making your money. But I do not think that speed itself is the only thing that is going to determine how big of these contracts you're going to be getting, you know, which lanes you're going to be pulling on these raceways. Like, a big impact of that is going to be your personality. Here's a perfect example of that. Let's take a look at Conor McGregor. So, for those that don't know, I don't know how you wouldn't know who Conor McGregor is, but biggest name in UFC. Like, whether you are a UFC fan or not, you know who Conor McGregor is. My dad, for example, my mom, for example. If you say, name a UFC fighter, they'll say Conor McGregor. All right, name another UFC fighter. I don't know, maybe Ronda Rousey. And these are names where Conor McGregor hasn't won since 2016, really. And Ronda Rousey hasn't been in the UFC since, what, 2018? So these are two names that they're this huge because of their personality that they're bringing. Whether you like it or not, they're polarizing, and that's what's important. And you see it with Sha'Carri Richardson. You have to be good. Those two were good. Sha'Carri Richardson, very good. Personality, also a huge thing. And look what she's doing. She's in Kanye music videos. She got a shout out in Drake's song. Like, she's going to these galas that you have to, you know, with Vogue and everything. I wouldn't be surprised she wasn't at the Oscars as well. Like, she's going to these big things. She's getting invited to be on these celebrity shows. And the reason is that she's utilizing her brand effectively. And so if I'm looking at athletes, it's like, yes, sure, I think you deserve to get paid a lot of money. What are you doing to deserve it, though? Yes, you need to run fast. Of course, you need to run fast. We've mentioned that already. But let's see what else you're doing. Are you interacting with your fan base? Are you hyping up your races? Are you releasing the schedule of the competitions you're going to be competing in before, you know, at the beginning of the season? Like, hey, look, guys, these are the 5 meets that I'm going to be competing in. Come and watch me run. Hey, after my races, I'm going to be doing a post-race breakdown of these competitions. Hey, we're going to do a Q&A. Do you have a Patreon? You're an athlete. Do you have a Patreon where you can be making money off of people getting exclusive access into your life and learning about you? Like, what are we doing to be able to make some of this money? And I think that comes with it. All the off-the-track things are important. That's going to build your brand. So I would ask the athletes, what are we doing to facilitate our growth? Don't just expect somebody else to do it for you. Do it your own. Like, facilitate in your own rescue. Like, be the one that can get you there. And so I would say that's an important thing. I think some athletes are doing it. Some athletes are doing amazing things, and some athletes doesn't look like you are. And that's their personality trait. It's fine. You don't have to, but don't expect to be paid the multi-million dollars if you're not running fast, so you don't have the personality to be interesting for fans. Next, I want to talk about Benjamin Osmadi. So this guy is doing crazy things. If you're not familiar with him, he's a Division II athlete out of West Texas. He just ran a 9.90 in the 100, the world lead, Division II national record, and it ties for the 4th fastest time ever. So he is doing fantastic right now, and he's been doing it for a little while. He's a sophomore. He ran the national record for the Division II national record indoors with a time of 6.54. And this is now going to be raising the question that I'm going to be asking, and that is, will we see 2 Division II athletes in the Bowerman final? Because right now, Benjamin Osmadi runs a 9.90, the world-leading time. He ran a 6.54, Division II national record, and it would have been the 5th fastest time in Division I. he's running crazy times and can be a world-leading athlete by the end of this. I mean, that 9.90 would have been the fastest time in college last year as well. And then we have Trevor Bassett, who also, he's coming off of his United States win in the 400 indoors. He's running the fastest he's ever run. He hasn't even gotten to outdoors yet, doing the event that is his actual event, which is the 400-meter hurdles. Like, this is going to be a very close race. Like, this will be very exciting, because if I'm looking at people that are ahead of him, there's not too many people ahead of him right now, especially for Benjamin Osmadi. Like, what? He's run the 9.90. One thing that stinks is that, you know, his national titles aren't going to hold as much weight as national titles for Division I, so, because they're just going to, you know, automatically assume, oh, the Division I titles mean more. So I think what we have to look more at instead of the accolades are the times that he's running. And so if he can be very consistent at that 10.09 to, you know, 9.90, if he can run even a little bit faster, then I think that it's going to be in the bag almost for him. And same with Trevor Bassett. I mean, he's now on the watch list, finally. He probably deserved to be on it last year. And now he's going to be going into the outdoors where he'll be running in his actual event. And if he can do a collegiate leading time, which he definitely has possible, I mean, Sean Burrell is going to be putting together a very excellent outdoor 400-meter, you know, barrage as well. Like, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. But if he can put together a really good outdoor time, what he did indoors is going to be really helpful for him to be on that potential Bowerman final. And that would be historic. We haven't had a Division II athlete be on the watch list, and we've never had them be in the actual finalists. We haven't had one. Now imagine if we could have two. Ooh-wee. That is going to be crazy stuff. I like the way that this year is shaping up. We've got the little guys just being huge here. I mean, we saw with St. Peter's and making the Elite Eight, and then we're seeing potentially two Division II athletes being in the final. Oh, man. This is the year of the little guy. We definitely have the people that are not at the major Power 5 school. We got North Carolina A&T potentially been winning championships. So this is the year for the mid-majors, the small schools, the people, the doubted, the Davids and the David versus Goliaths to rise to the top. And it's exciting, and I can't wait to see what's going to be happening next. Now, that brings us to the Texas Relays. So, Texas Relays, exciting meet as it always is. For me, it was a little unfortunate. Wasn't really able to watch it because it was only on Longhorn Network. It looked like it was on ESPN, but I didn't have availability for it. So, I really was only able to watch the results gear and some highlights. And so, we're going to go over a few highlights that I saw coming out of the Texas Relays. One thing, Mo, splits a 50.26. She was expecting it, and I mean, her confidence, she was like, yeah, I was expecting to run a time like that. And frankly, I'm expecting her to run times like that. Just crazy speed, and you know, she's going to be running sub 50 soon. I mean, that 49 is coming along very, very quickly. A part of that, we saw Dalia Muhammad. So she actually mentioned that you might see her doing the open 400 instead of doing the hurdles, which is like, oh my God. Like, this is a lady, former world record holder. She was a medalist in the world championships last year, or in the Olympics this past year, got silver. And she's talking about maybe doing the open 400 instead of the 400 meter hurdles. Now, I get it. Like, the 400 meter hurdles is becoming one of the most competitive races right now. Like, if you're looking at it, you got Dalia Muhammad, you got Sydney McLaughlin, you got Femke Bol, you're going to have Shamir Little. I'm sure there's going to be a whole lot of other women that are going to be in that top tier as well. I mean, here in the United States, Anna Cockrell. So it's going to be very, very competitive. And so I'm wondering if Dalia Muhammad, I mean, obviously she's kind of noticing that and saying, wow, this race is becoming very, very top heavy. Let me take a look at the 400. Is that a little bit more open? And it seems to be. Shawna Miller-Weibo, obviously, she's in a class of her own right now. Nobody can really touch her. And then after that, it's pretty open. I mean, I'm wondering who's going to be the next best there. I mean, we had Allison Felix get the bronze medal in the 400 at the Olympics. But it's going to be an open race, and I think she's realizing that. Like, yeah, I've got this speed, and the other event in the 400 seems to be a lot of young guns that are running fast times. Let me move over to the 400 where I have a better chance of potentially medaling, and I don't blame her. It's just weird actually hearing that. Like, yeah, the person that had the world record up until last year is going to be running in an off event. So should be exciting or interesting to see how that goes. Talking about the 400-meter hurdles, we had Britton Wilson of Arkansas running a 54.37 in the 400-meter hurdles, Texas relay record, and then another school record for Arkansas. She's been very exciting. I know I was looking forward to seeing how she would do at the indoor championship, and now that she's got her regular event, we're going to see some crazy times. Will she be able to challenge for a U.S. spot? Maybe, especially if we see Dalia Muhammad move, depending on how this year is going to finish up for her, it's a possibility. It's also the world leading time and the fastest 400 meter by an American ever in the month of March, in the month of March, that is. Finishing off here, we're staying on the women's side of things for the Texas relay, Anna Hall. So Anna Hall, she runs she was just 8 points shy of being able to set the World Athletics A standard in the heptathlon. And so she was very close, but what was even more impressive was how she closed out. She ran a 204 in the 800, not in an open 800. She ran a 204 in the heptathlon, which was the last event. And so that is the fastest time collegiately for an open runner or for a heptathlon runner. It is the American record in the heptathlon for the 800. And fastest time in the country, and it's an event PR for her. So she is becoming very exciting to watch here, and I'm sure she's taking a lot of that momentum from the pentathlon, that victory that she just had, and then moving that into here with outdoors. She was originally an 800 and a high jumper in high school. Those were her events, and so it's showing. Like, two of her best events still are the 800 and high jump, and so it's just, that's just a weird combo. You don't see that very often. And for her to be so successful in that, it's like, man, she has the potential to even, you know, do it. If she wanted to do an open 800, I'm sure if she was, you know, to drop her other event, she could probably be really successful in that. But Texas relay is very exciting. Also, extremely windy. There have been other fantastic times that we saw. Aaliyah Armstrong runs the what would have been all conditions NCAA record. We saw Toby. What's the last name? Gonna butcher his last name, but the guy of Boston who ran a 9.99 with like a 4 mile an hour wind. And so I think while many of the times that were ran were not wind legal, being able to run those fast times and see those numbers coming through can only be, you know, like great for the mental, like being able to see, oh yeah, like I ran a 9.99 or, you know, I'm running whatever it might be in whatever events it might be, a personal best, like seeing those numbers, it's like, oh yeah, I can do that. Even though there was a wind and you know there's wind, it's still good mentally, I'm sure, to be able to say, okay, I ran these fast times. That means we can do it. Hopefully there'll just be less wind next time and we can make it a win legal thing. But overall, very exciting weekend for both college and professional track and field. We've got some exciting meets coming up here soon. One thing that's weird is we're going to be seeing some pros run against some college kids in the 4x4 and the 4x1 for both the men and the women's side. I think it's great. We should be getting more relays in track and field, especially by professionals. Really looking forward to that. But yeah, that's going to be it from us here. Keep an eye out, depending on when you're listening to this or watching this, on April 1st. I think we're going to have some good news coming out, some interesting stuff of what's going to be going on in the future. So definitely keep an eye out. But that's it from us here with Track World News. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a like, subscribe, leave a review. It all helps us know that you're enjoying the channel and all the stuff we got going on here. That's going to do it from us here. Have a good one.